Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
I'm Father Dwight Longenecker. I'd like to invite you to join me for a pilgrimage tour to France this September. It's based on my book, St. Benedict and St. Therese, The Little Rule and the Little Way. I'll be teaching about the spiritualities and the lives of these two great saints, and we'll be visiting the great monastery of Fleury, where St. Benedict's relics are venerated, and of course going to Lisieux to visit the childhood home of St. Therese, the Carmel where she was a nun, and the great basilica dedicated to her honor. But there's more than that. At Paris, we'll be visiting the Basilica of Sacré-Cœur, Rue de Bac with the Miraculous Medal, going on to Vézelay, Nevers with St. Bernadette, Paray-le-Monial, where the devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus was given to St. Margaret Mary, and then Chartres Cathedral, Mont-Saint-Michel, the Normandy beaches, and more. I think there's not only going to be time for instruction and learning, but also prayer and worship, celebrating Mass in the various locations, and also time for fellowship and a good bit of French food and wine, too. Come and join us this September. If you'd like to know more, go to CatholicHeritageTours.com. That's CatholicHeritageTours.com, or be in touch with me through my website, DwightLongenecker.com.
Fellowship and love.
Fellow truth seekers, welcome to Beneath the Surface. Glad you could join us tonight and every Monday night live between 10 and 11 p.m. where faith and reason meets, where truth, life, and love are one, where we attempt to bring a little sanity into our age of insanity, a little life into our culture of death. Beneath the Surface, again, glad you could join us tonight. My guest, I will introduce to you in a second. My name is Paul Morano, your host. Tonight we go beneath the surface on the topic of hope in the midst of despair. Why life is precious. And this is a part two to the last live show that we've done here at WCAP on Beneath the Surface. And that last live show was with my guest that happens to be here again tonight for part two. Her name is Kathleen LaPlante. Kathleen, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I can't really hear you, but maybe that's my fault.
I don't know.
Yeah, why don't you try the other microphone and either one. Yeah, try that one.
Oops. Is this better?
Much better.
Okay.
Much better, yeah. So, Kathleen, you were here last week with us on Beneath the Surface, and you delved beneath the surface on the topic of unraveling my father's suicide, which happens to be the name of the book. You are a famous or an infamous author.
Oh, famous, yeah.
Of that book, Unraveling My Father's Suicide. You can find it anywhere on the internet. Go to Amazon.com and put in Unraveling My Father's Suicide or Kathleen LaPlante and you will find it. But anyway, we talked in depth last week about that book. So what I'd like to do for the first couple of minutes is maybe review some of the things we talked about last week so that we can bring this audience tonight up to speed. And then we're going to do a part two, because most of what we talked about last week was basically the despair part, the depression part, the part about what happens to you personally and generally speaking to people, particularly in families that have experienced suicide, and the right, the responses and emotional states that brings upon a person, that is rather natural. Sometimes it goes too far. And we talked about a lot of that stuff. Tonight we're going to talk more about the hope. You know, how do we overcome the depression and sometimes, at least it feels like, despair that can happen in life. But first, again, let's just review some of the things you talked about last week. Want to start?
I think we basically zeroed in on the story and my story. And, you know, that I grew up in a family with six kids. My mother raised us by herself. My dad was an alcoholic. He ended up taking his own life. I think we didn't mention, though, that he did that on my birthday.
Oh, we mentioned that a lot last week.
Oh, we did?
Yeah.
Okay. It's been a week. I can't remember.
Actually, it's been two.
Oh, two weeks. So, and then I think the other thing we didn't mention was how suicide tends to be sort of contagious, I guess. I don't know know what the word is, but like in my family, there's a lot of depression. There's a lot of alcoholism. And my father took his own life. Two of my cousins took their own life. One of the cousins that encouraged me to write this book so that people know what's going on, 6 months after I published it, she took her own life.
Wow.
Yeah.
Lord have mercy.
I know.
So you're saying it's something like what people are saying about divorce or even, say, child abuse, that somehow it seems to perpetuate itself if it's not stopped in its tracks from one generation to another.
Right.
Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes. I mean, not necessarily so, but it's common that that occurs.
Right. Yeah. Why do you think that is? Do you think that it sort of produces a sort of a some level of acceptability in a family culture, that this is a an acceptable way for solutions
of dealing with life?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because it could be. I mean, the experiences, so for me with my father, you know, my father jumped ship basically. And so maybe I didn't technically have that in my mind, but I had it in my being and in my essence, you know. And so
that's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
So it's easier to carry it forward. And I didn't mention though that I also tried. So I'm a suicide attempt survivor.
Yeah.
And so it's just a lot in my family.
Yeah. So we talked about that, and we talked about, your own depression and how, you survived your own attempt, and you are, and the world is very happy that that attempt wasn't quote unquote successful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we also talked a little bit about hope.
We got into it a little bit, but I think we both ended last show saying to ourselves we should have talked more about hope, because that's really the more important part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really what has the last word.
Right.
All right. So, hence the title of part two tonight, and that is Hope in the Midst of Despair, Why Life is Precious. And I think the second part of that title speaks highly about why the first part is so important, that life is precious, that life is, would you say, even it's a gift. Life is sacred. If you consider life a gift, then there must be a giver.
Correct. So one of the things I've been doing this past week is reading Pope Benedict XVI's encyclical of Spe Salvi, which is By Hope We Are Saved. And it's a wonderful read. Anyways, so he talks about how we have hope on sort of the earthly level, you know, like we're hoping for the next pay raise. We're hoping that our kid makes the baseball team. We're hoping this. But if you keep going and pushing that, you eventually reach a point where you realize it ends. Like,
yes,
that the ultimate hope is God.
Yeah, all of these little hopes in life are sort of like a domino. Each one is a domino,
mm-hmm.
and you achieve one hope, and then you need the next one, and then when that's achieved, then that satisfies for a little bit, and then you need the next one, and all of life follows, each domino follows the other until there's a last domino, and then you're sort of sitting there in your deathbed, you know you don't have much time left, and you're saying to yourself, what was it all for and where is it all going?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
What's this last domino? You know, what is its sort of, what jumping point does it bring me to? Yes?
Yes.
All right.
And that sort of gets into eternal life, you know, that,
yeah,
that we can live forever in the concept of, you know, God, I guess. some people, yeah, don't want to live forever and they think it's awful and they just want to be done with this life. But if they are able to find God, then they can turn it around and also see that there's a lot of grace that God gives us all. And, grace is a gift and, it can help us keep going.
Well, me being me, let's unpack some of the things you just said, because
okay,
it's too important to just throw out there. Number one, do you believe that everybody lives forever?
Do I believe everyone lives,
yes,
forever? I guess if you consider people in hell to be living,
yes,
then yes.
Is at least existing, yes.
Yes.
All right, so then you do believe that we have, like most major religions, particularly, well, actually both West and East, believe that human beings have an immortal soul that doesn't break down like bodies do. And so the soul, or the self-consciousness of the person, continues to exist on even after bodily death.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, you are also under the belief, hold the belief, that there are ultimately two eternal, never-ending destinies for all human beings, yes?
Yes.
Okay. And one of those is eternal happiness, the other one is eternal misery. Okay. Commonly known as?
Heaven and hell.
Okay. All right, so basically, I just wanted to throw that out on the table. This is your belief. This is many people's beliefs. This has been the belief of much of Judaism and all of Christianity, and it is the belief of many people today. All right, so.
So I'll interject a little
all right,
bit here.
Please do.
Last week we talked about culpability and whether someone who has taken their own life is culpable or not. And
culpable as meaning guilty.
Meaning or responsible.
Responsible
for it.
Yep.
And the answer came out that we don't really know. In the end, God's the only one that knows our final destiny.
Because we don't know.
We can't judge. We don't have his.
Yeah, but the two things that God knows that we don't about a person and their actions is how much knowledge they had at the time and
well,
how much free consent that they had while they were doing it, right?
Right, right.
And then, of course, with suicide, there's a third question, and that is, did the person sincerely repent as he or she was dying?
Mm-hmm.
That's another, perhaps, another question to contemplate, but you're right. Only God is privy to those three things. We're not. So that's why
right,
we don't judge. But we can judge the act itself objectively.
Right. I mean, the act of killing yourself, you know, that's murder. That's a sin.
Of the self,
know?
Yeah.
But under the guise of suicide and all the other extraneous things around, you know, we can't fully judge whether the person or how much they are responsible for it.
Right. Just like we can't judge how a person is responsible for any evil act that they do that is objectively evil.
Yes.
Okay.
I agree. Right. So what I was going to say is that when my dad took his life, for a long time, I wasn't a practicing Catholic at the time, but I did not have any hope about him. I just thought he was gone, in hell, was a horrible person, whatever. But when I converted to Catholicism and learned about praying and praying for the dead and praying because praying brings hope. And so I pray for my father now. I don't know. He could be in hell. He could be in not heaven. Maybe, I don't know, purgatory, whatever. I don't know, but there's at least reason to hope that yeah. something good might have happened.
There's reason to hope. I like that. And one reason there's reason to hope is now you realize that you can't judge whether he was fully culpable for his own act of suicide. There's a possibility that he wasn't in his right mind, which dwindled, if not eradicated, his own free will at the time. Yes?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
All right, so then you had mentioned a little earlier, about 5 minutes ago, the word grace. And you said there is grace out there for people. Why don't you explain a little bit about what that means for those who are not religious?
I don't know the technical definition, but the way I experience it or sense that this is what it is that it's a gift to us to basically move forward in good.
Okay. Move forward in the right path.
In the right direction.
In good.
Yeah.
And I would just add maybe a technical definition to that, and that is that traditionally grace has meant the divine life of God given to a person or inside or in the soul of the person so that they may overcome all of those obstacles, internal and external, that keep them from that union with God and that happiness and peace that they could attain. All right.
Makes sense.
All right, we need to take a break as the music is telling us. A quick break. You're listening to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio. Paul Morano with my guest, Kathleen LaPlante, speaking about hope in the midst of despair, why life is precious. Lots more good stuff to come. Don't go away. We'll be right back. We're back. Back are we. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. As soon as Cindy pots this music down, we'll be able to start again. But she is very busily on the telephone, so 978-454-4980 is our phone number. You're listening to Beneath the Surface here on WCAP Radio.
There we go.
Oh, we actually have a phone call. That's why you were busy on that telephone. You're listening to Beneath the Surface, talking to Kathleen LaPlante. Hope in the midst of despair. Why life is precious. Lots more to go, but let's take this phone call. Hi, you're Beneath the Surface with us.
I'm happy to be beneath the surface with you, Paul, and with Kathleen. This is Dave Dowd.
Hello, Mr. Dowd.
Hi, David.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you for being brave and for raising this subject and for providing us an opportunity to go beneath the surface on this subject. As you and Paul probably know, I have a younger brother who actually did commit suicide. And, yes, the experience rips apart people who loved him in ways that only those who've experienced such loss can understand. But I want to mention something that happened that I think is real reason for hope. And then I have a little brief anecdote from Father Carapi, which I want to share with you.
Okay. By the way, I'm sorry to hear that. I don't remember that being the case that your brother is has gone. But sorry to hear that, Dave.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you. Another time, I'll share you more details.
Okay.
But sincerely, for the moment, Dan had some friends. He was in music. He was in Greenfield, Mass. And some of his friends really stuck up for him. One man, the detail I guess I should share, he was, depressed, and he had a, pyelonite cyst that was not healing. He had been to the, VA in Greenfield, Franklin Medical Center for, several appointments, and, the wound did not heal. This particular day, a Sunday, he went on a Friday, and he was, experienced anxiety. He didn't stay at the appointment. They said, come back over the weekend. He went back over the weekend, and a different team of people refused to see him. And he went into a dark place. And he told them if they wouldn't treat him when he was alive, they could have his body. And Paul and Kathleen, this is pretty grim, and your listeners, I apologize, but he did shoot himself in the lobby of the VA office.
Wow.
Yeah. It was, you know, a shock to all of us.
Dave, I didn't hear the injury. What kind of injury was it?
He went into the lobby with two pistols.
I mean before that.
The pyelonite cyst. That's the cyst on the bottom of the backbone.
Oh, a cyst. Okay.
And it was not healing, and he had been in and out of the hospital 10 times trying to get the area healed.
And they were unable to heal him of this?
No, they were not able to heal him. And
okay.
It created a lot of discomfort, obviously, when you're sitting down, and he had a lot of pain associated with this every time it would start bleeding. He was up in New Hampshire with myself and my grandmother and my aunt and my cousin, and he played some songs for us on his guitar, and we all enjoyed his, you know, beautiful song for our grandmother. And, you know, after he played, his back started bleeding, and he had to leave early. You know, he had those kinds of interruptions in his life.
Okay.
But in terms of hope, and this is really what I think I've learned from Kathleen in reading her book and certainly talking with her over the years, you know, there is hope. And there's hope for us who are survivors. And Dan had a couple of friends. One friend named Ron Bazell is a musician, and he started writing to the local newspaper complaining about the VA trying to get attention for people in Dan's condition to receive better treatment. And, you know, the VA did respond. Another friend went to the VA, the Franklin Medical Center in Greenfield, and he said, look, you know, this is what happened. My friend died. But people are dying of suicide on a regular basis. Can you host a meeting here for people who have had this terrible loss in their lives so they can begin to make sense out of their lives?
Hmm.
And Kathleen and Paul, you're going to be happy to hear, the Franklin Medical Center said to Don Brooks, yes, if you host the meeting.
Hmm.
And this is a man who is a musician. He's not particularly trained in, you know, the kinds of science that these kind of matters involve, but they provided him with a professional as a co-host, and I can tell you that I attended the meeting and before I moved to New York, and I was just as happy as I can be because I listened. You know, happy is not the right word, but I was moved. I listened to a couple who had lost their son, who had been a valedictorian of his class at Greenfield High School, and have been accepted at a military institution for college. And the summer before he entered college, he took his life. And I listened to a mother whose son was in Colorado and, you know, living the good life. And they found him passed away in his apartment. And these folks had the opportunity in a group setting, like AA, like Al-Anon, like a group that I was part of in Connecticut, to really learn from others and learn from each other those little steps that we have to take almost on a day-by-day basis to begin to find some healing. So I just really want to salute Franklin Medical Center and Don Brooks for hosting this in Greenfield. I don't know exactly what day of the month they meet, but I'm sure the medical center could answer the question if somebody called. May I give you one more point, and this is important, particularly in view of Kathleen's discussion of praying for her death.
Okay, go ahead.
Father Karapi has a video that I just saw in the past couple of weeks, and I'll try to look for this and send this to you. But in his video, he said that he reminded us that God exists outside of time. He exists prior to the moment when my brother decided to take his life.
Mm.
And my prayers for my brother can go to our Lord, who can go back to my brother in the moments before he took his life.
Yes.
And encourage him, just like you said, Paul,
yep,
to, you know, find some way to make a change of heart.
Yes, I think that's an extremely important point to make.
Yes.
Dave, I want to thank you for your call. I want to get Kathleen's comments on your comments, too. But thanks for calling Beneath the Surface.
Good to hear from both of you, and thank you again, Kathleen, for speaking up.
Okay.
Sure.
Kathleen, your response.
Well, actually, I'm sort of set on the last part of what he said when he talked about he can pray for his brother, and he can pray it, you know, pray to God, and his God can deliver the prayers, basically. And things can change because he's out of time. So that I have gotten that sense as well that, because I pray for a lot of people, and I pray for a lot of dead relatives, you know.
Yes.
And I pray that they get the grace to be able to transform their soul.
So Catholic, you pray for the dead, for those who you believe are in purgatory, in that purgation, purifying state, before one enters heaven, right?
Right.
But you also recognize what Dave said, that God, of course, is eternal, which means eternal outside of time. He transcends time, space, and matter. So your prayers, which are in time, since you're a limited creature, going to God, who's outside of time, it's possible anyway that God could apply your prayers and your love to
that situation,
and that person at that moment before there is no more time left in their life to make that ultimate choice for them, eternal choice for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. 978-454-4980. We're talking to Kathleen LaPlante, author of the book Unraveling My Father's Suicide, and this show is on the topic of hope in the midst of despair, why life is precious.
Paul, can I interject at this point and go over some of the resources that are available to people struggling with depression or thinking about suicide or people, those left behind? The good news is that there's actually quite a bit of organizations that you can get in touch with. And many of them cover the different facets of suicide. So there's there's suicide loss. So for me, after my father passed away, I had to deal with the loss of that. And then there's someone who attempts suicide and now they're back living and they have to deal with that. In suicide, there are a lot of different kinds of supports. There's organizations with different facets, and there's also support groups. You know, I know here in Littleton, there's a group called See a New Sun Foundation. They have a walk every year to raise money to help counter suicide and mental health problems in children who are middle school and high school. And I've done their walk for, I think, 4 years now. And they also carry on a support group for people who have been affected by someone else's suicide. Mm. Then there's the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, which is afsp.org. Of course, you can just go in and Google suicide prevention, suicide loss, all these things, and you'll probably be able to find some things. Mm. The other one I want to mention is for vets.
Yeah.
At least there are some sites that are specific for vets and suicide and mental health issues, but there's also a 1-800 number specific for vets, and that's 1-800-273-8255, and vets would push 1.
Okay.
And then they'd get their particular issues addressed. So, and the other thing is that there are groups that help people left behind from the suicides, which I think I've already mentioned, but, it's just an awful, awful, awful thing. I mean, it just infiltrates so many people's lives, even just one suicide, you know, it's not great. And the other last thing I just want to mention is people have depression, anxiety, bipolar 1 or bipolar 2, they can seek out counseling. And you don't even have to have those medical diagnoses to get counseling, because you might just need it for a tough time that you're going through. So that's the other thing.
Very good. Very good. Kathleen, let me go beneath the surface with you on this whole notion of hope. All right? First, give me a very quick definition of hope. What is hope? And it doesn't have to be the definition, but one that you understand it to be.
I guess I would say it involves hoping for things that aren't yet seen.
So being confident about maybe the future or the unseen presence?
Yes.
Having some a level of confidence about that and some level of... it's hard to, some level, I was going to say some level of hopefulness, but that just sort of makes it redundant.
Right.
But as we said earlier, you said that in Pope Benedict spoke of in that encyclical of his, that there are certain, little hopes that occur in this life. You know, whether it be, you know, finding a mate, getting a job, you know, having a child, and those are the big ones. And then there are a lot of small ones, too, all along the process. Can a person have hope if they don't have hope in those little things of this life?
Can they have the larger hope of God?
Well, can they have hope?
Oh, in
Period.
General.
Yeah.
I think having come from my situation, I almost feel like if you're alive, you have hope. It's not really true.
Even if nothing else is going well for you,
mm-hmm.
suppose you have all of these dreams and none of them come true. No matter what you do, you're stagnated, you're hitting your head against the wall. Nothing that you wanted to happen in your life has happened.
And now, that's despair.
Well, not necessarily. That's just speaking about things that have not happened. My question to you is, can a person not fulfill their dreams in this life and still be hopeful?
You know, my initial reaction is to say yes. I think it's possible. I think it's really hard, especially for people that have mental health problems.
Okay.
To do that.
But wouldn't it be hard for people with mental health problems to have hope even if things are going well for them?
Yes. Yep.
But there are a lot of people today I know of that's, you know, they haven't found that mate that they've been looking for decades. They haven't landed that job that they've wanted. They haven't fulfilled the dream that they've had since childhood. They're not making the money that they can to properly sustain themselves in a manner in which they would like to. All of those things that seem to be basic things that happen for most people in life don't happen for a lot of people today.
Mm-hmm.
So my question to you is, can you have hope and how do you maintain it without those little hopes in life?
Well, I think that you maintain it through prayer. I mean, that's one of the big things. Actually, Pope Benedict the 16th lists three different areas of how you can practice hope or generate it or, you know.
Interesting.
And one of them, the first one is prayer, and that you need that connection, an intimate connection with yourself and with God to be able to experience hope.
Now, you just said two very important things. That intimate connection with yourself and God.
Right.
Would you say that you can have a true and intimate connection with yourself without a good connection with God?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
I mean, I don't believe you can have a lot. There are a lot of things you can't have without God.
Right, in one metaphorical, symbolic sense, you would see that God is like a mirror to us.
Mm-hmm.
in that respect. We're able to know ourselves the more we know God.
Yes.
Okay.
I would agree with that.
All right. So then you believe that you can transcend the disappointing things that happen or do not happen in this life by having that intimacy with the creator of this life, the one who loves you more than you love yourself, and that is God.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say to the person listening to the show that is an agnostic or doesn't have any particular religion and has sort of a vague understanding of religiosity, that doesn't pray? What would you say to them?
Well, I would probably let them know that I'm praying for them, even though they don't pray.
Yeah.
I tell them to go see Paul Morano. can you hear me? Because
yeah.
I can't hear.
Oh, you can't hear through the headphones?
Headphones, no.
Okay. Yeah, you're fine. You're fine. Cindy, you can hear Kathleen? She can't hear the okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what were we saying? I forget.
Well, can
oh, a person, what would you say to that person?
Yeah.
I think I would share as much of my story, throughout life, especially my conversion story, and, you know, sort of do a little evangelization, in your face kind of thing, but something. So here's the other thing about hope. Hope is not individualistic. So all these things that we talk about, hoping for a job, hoping for more money, hoping for my son, whatever, that's individualistic. But there's the greater hoping that goes with God. And so this person, I believe to sustain any hope that might come their way is to get to know God.
All right, let me go a little more beneath the surface about this whole idea here, this whole truth that you speak of. The Bible calls, St. John in the Bible says that God is love. That's his very essence. So basically what we're saying, I think, is that people need to experience love. When they need to experience God, who is love. So they need to experience love, whose source, of course, is God. And with most people, that goes through the medium of family members, friends, spouses, children, etc. And it also, of course, is direct because you spoke of a prayer life and you believe in a sacramental life and those direct encounters with God. But it also, like I said, includes having mediums to that God's love, that you experience love through these people. Now, a lot of people today don't have those mediums, if you will. They don't have those good friends, that healthy family life,
right,
in which they can experience God's love through these particular people.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be very lonely. And I think a lot of these people are feeling that emptiness. How would you address that problem of experiencing God's love? Because that's a necessity. That's the basic bottom line. You need to experience that love without those personal mediums, earthly mediums to experience it with.
I think that's a real challenge. I'm not sure how I would address it. I think it can't be addressed, like most things, it can't be addressed in one, you know, meeting or connection or gathering, whatever. So I think it would be over time, and that's partially how love gets experienced. It's over time.
But can you get to know and experience God's love without these necessary
I know
instruments?
What you're trying to get, like, the daily hopes.
Yeah, can you have a prayer life? Can you know this and experience this love without having that spouse, that good spouse, or that good parent, or that good friend?
I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's definitely possible. I think that God can take up the slack
mm-hmm.
for all of those who are missing these things. I think it's very possible. And I think that you touched upon it earlier with having a prayer life. And for those who aren't used to prayer, perhaps you could begin with what is commonly known as the agnostic's prayer. That is that just say something like, you know, maybe get into a very quiet room and begin to meditate and say something like, God, I don't know if you exist, but if you do, please somehow in some way enable me to understand that you exist and that you really care about me.
Mm, that's wonderful.
And then be quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And let your hearts be open to God if he does exist. Now, you may or may not experience something that night. It may come later, at a later time. But at least you made that prayer. You made that, and you opened yourself up to God's supernatural grace that we talked about earlier.
Right. Yep. I don't know what made me think of this, but the 12-step programs,
yeah,
they're all based on having a higher power. So, like, they know that there's hope among the meetings and between the people, but that they all, that everybody needs a higher power to really live life to its fullest.
Yeah, by virtue of being kicked out of Eden, we as a species are an addictive species, aren't we? Mm-hmm. I mean, it might be alcohol, it might be drugs, it might be the wrong person or people, it might be food, it might be sex in some various way or another. Who knows? But we can become very dependent and obsessed with sin.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to get yourself out of that quicksand, that spiritual and psychological quicksand, you need somebody from above to help you out. And I think that's what Alcoholics Anonymous and all of these 12-step programs are saying. I can't get myself out of this quicksand.
Right.
I need something who is above the quicksand to help me out of this.
And that's greater than me, yeah.
And that's greater than me. And that transcends this.
Yep.
And, so very good. Very, very important point there.
Yes. So when David called in, one of the things that I thought of was suicide knows no boundaries. Mm. You know, suicide will take the lives of the homeless. It'll take the lives of the rich. It'll take the lives of, you know, the child in the library. There are no boundaries to it. Mm. And that's what makes it really challenging because it's encompassing.
Yeah. I think another thing to think about is that people with firm senses of self tend to be more confident and more at peace. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, I would agree with that.
Then, which brings me to my next question then. Number one, how do we not have that sense, that confident sense of self? And number two, if we don't have it, how do we get it?
How do we have it? It's kind of the same as how do we get it.
This reminds me of what we were talking about earlier, doesn't it? How in one sense, God acts as a mirror.
Right.
That we're able to know ourselves and to confidently love ourselves because God knows, loves, and accepts us.
Mm-hmm. And we connect with him.
Yeah. Now, a lot of people experience that through the medium of a good relationship or some other thing. More and more people, unfortunately, in my opinion, are depending on animals for this today. You know, a good pet cat or a good pet dog or their horse or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, its source, if you don't have any of those things, is God himself.
And this brings me to the other related topic for me, anyways. And I think the term abortion is somewhat limited, so I speak of it as killing babies in the womb. I know that offends some people, but I feel like you cannot end a pregnancy, you cannot abort a pregnancy, unless you kill a baby in the womb. And so I just get explicit with it.
Yeah.
But anyways.
And by the way, it's common sense.
Mm-hmm.
But go ahead.
So there are people, I've been surprised that there are people working hard in the suicide fields. And the message is to people that are struggling, you know, that life is precious. You are wanted. You are needed. Mm-hmm. Stay around. There's always hope. There's always hope.
Okay.
But then when it comes to the killing of babies in the womb, the message is there is no hope, you know. A lot of times it's that this kid's going to grow up poor and sick and he's better off dead. You know, like, that's just insane thinking. I don't mean that literally, sorry.
Yeah.
But it's just, there are a lot of parallels between suicide and killing babies in the womb. And I think it's interesting that some people in the suicide field are pro-choice and pro-abortion and pro-killing babies in the womb. And in both instances, life is precious, which is what you're talking about.
That is a wonderful parallel that you're making there. It's interesting how they're not pro-choice when it comes to suicide, but they are pro-choice when it comes to feticide.
Right.
Why is that? It is a logical contradiction, is it not?
I think it is.
Yeah. So if life is precious, if life is good, and if hope is certainly possible, no question about it, then why would anyone want to take any life?
Mm-hmm.
At least, you know, that isn't in self-defense as a last resort.
Well, it's, you know, they're in pain, they're self-absorbed, they can't see the future for what it really might be.
And those things, those three things that you just said, apply to both suicide and abortion, do they not?
Exactly, yep.
Yeah, so it's the same cure.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the same cure for both ailments.
And in one case, it's looked down upon, and in the other case, it's not.
Yeah.
You know, in like suicide, it's looked down upon to
I suggest that one of those reasons is because there's a lot of money to be made in killing babies. Places like Planned Parenthood and others make millions of dollars, and abortionists make lots of money off killing people. So that's unfortunately, as St. Paul in Scripture says, the love of money is the root of all evil.
Yes.
And very often we can trace down the underlying reasons why evil continues to occur in our society by looking at the money trail.
I would like to share a thing that happened with my primary care doctor.
Okay.
At one point, I went in and I was going for a physical, and they handed me an iPad and to take an interview on, not an interview, a questionnaire on depression and suicide, because that's always included. They were not very prompt, and it was almost a half an hour that I was waiting for my appointment, and I've decided that I don't wait that long for doctors anymore. It's just how it is. It's like, I don't get mad about it. I just leave, and that's it. So that's what I did. And they didn't get back to me until like 8 o'clock that night. This was 11 o'clock in the morning. 8 o'clock at night, and in that depression questionnaire at the time, I had said I was having suicidal thoughts. I was really depressed. And it was just really too bad, because here they had this advance for mental illness, but yet they didn't have plans to back it up, to back the responses up. And, you know, it's just, it's, you know, plus and minus, push, pull. It's progress, but and it's a learning, I guess. So I just wanted to share that.
Okay. 978-454-4980 is the Beneath the Surface hotline tonight. 978-454-4980 if you want to join us in this conversation on hope in the midst of despair, why life is precious. Is life precious, and why?
Life is precious.
I mean, you like you said earlier, you had attempted suicide years ago.
Uh-huh.
Do you find life to be precious and joyful, and why?
No, not all the time.
Okay.
And I still struggle with depression.
Okay.
So sometimes that overtakes me, and I have to do just like everybody else with mental health and put one foot in front of the other. Go get support, call a friend, go to your counselor, whatever it is to keep you away from the brink, the edge.
But you do all of those things. You intentionally struggle in a positive way to overcome these negative thoughts and feelings because you believe that life is precious.
Right.
Why?
Why is like, I guess my experience with my kids and my mother and my sisters and brothers, just knowing the connection that we have.
Now, your mother has passed on.
My mother has passed on,
yes. You still sense that connection with her?
I do because I pray.
Okay.
And then also I visit her gravesite.
Yeah.
So that keeps the connection, and so does talking with my brothers and sisters, you know, about my mother.
Yeah.
So it's just sweet. It's like when you really experience the love in those situations, it's sweet, and you know that it's precious. It's just can be fleeting.
Yeah.
It's
just something that is wonderful because you. I mean, life, you did not create yourself. You were created for a purpose. With this last couple of minutes that we have, tell me about this whole notion of meaning and purpose that is so important for people to have in order to maintain that hope and experience that love of God that He truly has for us.
It's a challenge because my kids are grown and... the empty nest syndrome is real, you know? And so they're living their lives and I don't get to see them as often. And it can be hard to feel like I have a purpose.
But underneath all of those this life things and this life problems,
right.
There's something there, isn't there?
Well, there's God.
And you recognize that.
Right.
So then living with temporary sufferings now for you is easier to, I guess, deal with?
Manage.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned in our last show about joining my suffering to Christ on the cross.
Yeah.
And how that is salvific and that helps other people. And so that provides me some purpose because suffering through life, it just exists. It can't be ridden of totally.
Mm.
So I don't know, that's one of the ways.
Yeah, if I could just unpack that a little bit with the minute that we have left. You as a Catholic Christian believe that you're a part of the extended body of Christ on earth.
Mm-hmm.
That shares the same soul with Jesus in heaven, and that soul is the Holy Spirit, the same life. And so that if you as a member of His body, if you follow Him, the head, in that suffering and then salvific suffering for the salvation of souls, then you get to take part in that with your own sufferings. You can offer your sufferings to be placed in and with Jesus on the cross to save other souls, you believe.
Yes.
And so that you, as part of the extended body, the church, offer your prayers for the salvation of souls, and that you find meaningful when it comes to suffering.
Yes. And it's...
Why don't you give us a last word to sum things up here?
Last word. No, just kidding. I just want to say, like, right now, I just feel really, really blessed to be here and to share with others things and hopefully give hope to others.
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tours Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.